Mitzvah Reish Yud Tes 218, Mitzvahs Leket. And we know that Leket, Shicha, and Peah go together. Those are the agricultural gifts that one gives to the poor. And after Peah, so the next in the order is Leket. And the Sefer HaChinuch, interestingly, in the original order of the Sefer HaChinuch, as we know, all of the positive commandments come first in the parasha, and then all the negative commandments, as we have now in the order of the Torah. So this is one of the places where it's very unusual that the reordering of the Sefer HaChinuch is done out of order. Because if you look at Peah, for example, so the Torah says, Lo sechale pe'asodcha b'kutzrecha, you should leave it to the poor. The positive command comes second, whereas here in our order, so the mitzvahs peah, the positive command comes first, as in the original order of the Sefer HaChinuch, then the negative commandment, so it's really the opposite. So the reason is that we're going in the order, because here he usually, the more extensive explanation happens to come first. But here, the more extensive explanation of Peah is found in the positive commandment. So here, it'll be weird, although occasionally it does happen. Here, you go according to the order of you leave it, and then you're not allowed to do it. So apparently, the reorderer of the Sefer HaChinuch thought this one, this made more sense in this one instance, even though it goes against the principle that you go according to the order in the Torah. But anyway, of course, that the positive commandment of Mitzvahs Peah comes before the negative commandment anyway in the original order, but much farther removed than we have it here.
So, excuse me, do all these gifts that have to be given, tithes, etc., apply nowadays also in Chutz La'aretz?
The Rabbanan, yeah.
They do?
Yes, on the Raisa it's only in Eretz Yisrael. And some say even
on Meiser also?
Not Meiser, no.
Not Meiser.
No. There's a famous, in terms of Maisa, there's a famous, so most Rishonim say flat out that it doesn't, the terms of Maisa only apply, obviously midaraisa in a time where, according to many Shitas, it's only midaraisa in a time when most of the Jews live in the land of Israel. We're coming up on that pretty quickly. So,
So whose psak is that?
That's the Rambam holds that. And then it's the Rabbanan, you have to give Trumas u'Maisris in the lands that are immediately adjacent to the land of Israel. So in Egypt and in western Jordan and southern Syria, you have to give Trumas u'Maisris. The post can talk about how this was never the minhag. None of the Jews living in these places ever gave Trumas u'Maisris. So why exactly that's the, because now it's not the Raisa. Therefore, it's like sort of like Xeras. Now in Eretz Yisrael, it's only the Rabbanan, so it's too much. And anyway, the post can struggle why exactly this should be the Minhag. So there is...
Did you say Minhag?
Minhag, yeah.
Minhag, that's all it is. It's Minhag at most.
No, the Minhag not to do it. The Halacha seems to be that you have to do it.
Oh, yeah.
But the Minhag was always not to do it. So the post can discuss why exactly that should be the case. But, so there is a Toisvis in Maseches Chulin that's very famous, that discusses why he seems to imply that really you have to give Shubas to Maisris Derabanan everywhere in the world. It says, they said here in France, why don't we give Shubas to Maisris? So they discussed the whole thing.
Who do you have to give it to?
Cohen or Levi. Or burn it, or whatever you do with Kala.
You happen to know A. Cohen, so it all goes to him. You have to give him like 10% of your earnings.
So we discussed last time when we talked about Peah that there's a big difference between the presents that you give to a Kohen and the presents that you give to poor people, like the Leket and the Shicha and the Peah, which is that you remain a quasi ownership over the Trumas u'Maisris that you give to a Kohen and Levi to the extent that you get to choose to whom you give it. Whereas by the Leket, Shicha, and Peah, the agricultural things that you give poor people, so you have no choice. And the poor people can come take it from you.
But that's only if you're a farmer.
Right, if you don't have a farm, then you're not liable for all these things.
None of those apply.
Right, so the Toisa says in Chulin, so why don't we give Trumas u'Maisris in France? Because the king could take away our land if he wanted, so since we don't fully own it 100%, so therefore we don't have to give Trumas u'Maisris in France. So some people point out that they think, that the Shad and that Toisa is that they didn't quite understand the map of the world. So they thought that France like curled down more, so it was much closer to Eretz Yisrael than it really is.
They thought it was adjacent to Eretz Yisrael?
Not adjacent, but I forget the exact details, but they thought that France was much closer to Eretz Yisrael than it really is. So that's why they said that. They don't mean that you have to give Trumas Sumaisras their Rabbanan, that if a Jewish person has a farm, you have to give Trumas Sumaisras everywhere in the world. That Tosis probably didn't mean. So anyway, I never heard of such a thing that outside the certainly outside the lands really close to Eretz Yisrael that you have to give Trumas and Maisras to Rabbanan.
So Tosfos are the ones that thought that you did have to.
Yeah.
And
most other poskim say flat out there's absolutely no requirement whatsoever, and outside the lands that are just adjacent to Eretz Yisrael, there's no requirement to give Trumas and Maisras at all.
And then the idea of being adjacent is that there might be a suffix as to whether something, a particular piece of land, it might be included or not, or is that the idea? Right?
No, I think it's just that, you know, people, you cross the border, so now you have to give Truma some ice, you cross the border the other way, it could be, you know, okay. 2 feet.
That's true of every other, you know...
Yeah, but since it's close, so people, you know, if you live there, so you could come to Eretz Yisrael any minute, maybe you'll be more wanting to fulfill the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, so therefore you might cross over any second, and you're going to want, the Chazal wants you to get in practice. I mean, you just look at When Jews started moving back to Eretz Yisrael en masse, you know, in the last 150 years, so there, the Hafreshes Trumas Maisras was a disaster because nobody knew what they were doing. That's why the Chazon Ish had to work so hard on trying to establish clear guidelines and that everyone had that everyone was going to follow as to how to apply the exact rules of Trumas Maisras to contemporary agriculture. It was really a disaster. He said that apparently someone, a Chashav Rav, Talmud Chacham, once came to the Chazon Ish, and he said he just found out that, you know, when his wife buys produce, that how does she separate Truma Sumaisris? She says she takes off like a little bit that she thinks is, you know, relative, approximately the right amount, and she says, this is for Meiser, and throws it out. So he still wanted to know to the Chazon Ish, what do? Do they have to kasher all their kelim? So the Chazon Ish said he thinks that Bidyevit even...
Why did they have to kosher the kelim?
Because maybe that Hafreshes Trumas Maisras doesn't work, and they eat tevel.
Oh my God.
Maybe they eat tevel. So he said, hey, this is a Chashuv Talmud Chacham. They simply didn't know what to do. It's totally outside their purview. I mean, it's... So the Chazon Ish said he thinks that Bidyevit Yir Yotze. He had a very... Not everybody agrees with this. Because you have to say, you have to separate. When you separate Trumas and Maisras, you have to designate... Well, this part is for this truma, and this part is for this meiser, and then there's meiser sheni, and you have to be machal of the meiser sheni. So the Chazon Ish thought that what she had in mind is that hafreshes trumas meiser should work in accordance with a standard text. That's whatever that's assumed to be accurate. So he felt that b'dieved that's good enough. But that's not everybody agrees.
There's
that.
No one on the receiving end, no kohen to.
So
who are you giving it to?
I mean, the hafresha is chal before you give it to the kohen. In other words, once you say that this is truma, this is meiser, this is whatever, you do the correct formula, then that removes the prohibition of tevel, of non-meiseredness, from the produce. The giving to the kohen is a second stage. It doesn't have to reach the hands of the kohen for the produce now to become kosher and untevelified.
Wasn't it the objective to support the kohen who didn't have any nachal of Eretz Yisrael? And this kind
yes.
of wasting it to just have fresh and to throw it in the garbage?
Well, the amount that's wasted is not that much. It's about 1%, slightly more than 1%. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're right. It's a lot of when you have thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds of produce. So, yeah, that's a lot.
I thought in Israel there were some things where they organized this and gave it to somebody.
The truma, because that's what the truma is. That's a little more than 1%. That's truma gedola. That's the first truma that you have to give to the kohen. Plus the trumas meiser, where you separate the 10% to give to the levi, so the levi has to give 10% to give to the kohen also. So that's the little more than 1%, the tiny amount plus the 1%. So that cannot be eaten. That's why you have to throw it out. But there are certain circumstances where technically, let's say you have oil. That's used for have olive oil. That's now true. That's now truma. So the kohen, even though the kohen is tameh, is not allowed to eat truma. So he could use it to light a candle. So technically you could give things like that, combustible things, to a kohen to use for lighting a candle. I mean,
what about the law of lahafrish challah?
What about it?
Does that apply chutz la'aretz?
Yeah, sure.
I know people are doing. I don't bake challah, so I was just curious whether that was not excessive.
Yeah, that's the Jewish woman's favorite mitzvah, you know. How would they like that if it wouldn't be applicable in Chutz Laretz?
You mentioned that,
They're Rabbanan.
The Tevel is Matame Kalim. Why should that be?
What do you mean Matame? You mean to make it not kosher?
The idea that the Sarapa would have to go, but it's like any Machal is a Saris. Okay, so it's alright.
It's like if you cook, It's like if you cook pork in your Kalim, it's the same thing. It's not kosher. Okay. Not kosher.
Is that everybody's consensus? Is there a consensus about that?
That's not kosher. Tevel is not kosher. It's the same not kosher as... that's why you have to be careful when, when you're mafresh challah and you burn it in your oven. So you have to make sure that it doesn't get on any of your dishes. That's going to make the dishes not kosher.
It doesn't make your oven not kosher.
Well, if you wrap it well in aluminum foil and you just burn it at the bottom and it doesn't come into contact with anything, then yeah. It doesn't make your oven not kosher. So, yeah. Fine. So, leket. What's leket? La'azov ha'leket la'aniyim. To give the leket to the poor people. V'humash nofel mitoch ha'magal b'shas k'tzira. That's what falls from inside the scythe when you're whacking the produce and trying to harvest it. O mitoch ha'yad b'shas t'lisha. Or that falls from your hand when you're harvesting things by hand. So it says that if it's something that's normally harvested by implement, like a scythe, so let's say that's like wheat stalks. So if you happen to be harvesting your wheat stalks with your hand, so that's not normal. So therefore, anything that falls from your hand is not like it. It has to be harvested in the normal manner.
How about today if they have like a combine?
A combine. Yeah, maybe it's anything that falls from the combine. Mm-hmm.
Anything that falls for sure, but I mean, in other words, is there that much that...
Well, we'll see in a second. Maybe it's too much, but it's an excellent point. That's a good point. We have to figure out exactly how to apply this to modern agricultural machines. But if there's something that's normal to be harvested by hand, let's say, I think, what's normal to be harvested by hand? Onions, probably? Mm-hmm. Something that grows vegetables, I don't know. Shenemar Beleket... Mitzvah, you never harvested anything, you never baked challah. You need to get more in touch with the agricultural mitzvahs of the Torah. Have to be mafresh challah at least, you know, once in your life. Shenemar beleket. So it says by leket, le'aniv v'lager tazov osam. You have to leave it for the proselyte and the poor person. Mishor she'amitzvah kasavti mitzvah sapeak mash yedati. So the reason I said above, because we have to be kind-hearted and we have to support fellow Jews who are... we're not as well off as we are. And we pointed out last time also that non-Jews, if a non-Jew comes to take any of these things, so you don't stop him. Really, really only Jews are supposed to take it, but in order not to create ill will between the Jewish and the non-Jewish communities, if a non-Jew comes to take it, then you just let him. Well, at that time, she was Jewish.
I don't know.
Medine
Hamitzvah. She was Jewish?
What?
She was Jewish before she married,
Well, she was Jewish when she came, okay, I mean, we could discuss the things, you know, when she became Jewish.
The three statements, I'll go where you go, I'll be buried, and I have my people.
Yeah, so she was at least Jewish at the time she came back with Naomi to Eretz Israel. I mean, but of course we say, you know, she must have converted before she married Machlon. Okay, whatever it is, but she was definitely Jewish by that time. Medine Hamitzvah. But even so, even if she wasn't Jewish, so Boaz still would have been had to let her take.
Right.
I mean, she wasn't really entitled to it. No, Ruth was just a tzaddikah. She wasn't really entitled to it, so she wouldn't have taken it. Okay, fine. Midine hamitzvah kigon mash amr zichronim lebracha shibolas achas ushtayim leket. So if one stalk or two stalks fall, so that is leket. Shalosh einam leket. But if it's three that fall, that's too much. Let's say you're harvesting at every whack of the site. So let's say you harvest 10 stalks, and then three of them fall, like what? You're giving, that's 30% of your field. You're giving it to like it? That's ridiculous. You can't give everything to the poor, then the people won't have enough money to support the poor in other endeavors. Kilomar, shim naflu, shalos shibolim, o yoser biyachad miyada kotzer. That if three stalks or more fall, shlosh dan levala sada, so that the person who owns the field gets to keep them. Shein din leket ela b'muad. The leket is by definition a small amount. You can't give too much to the poor.
So it keeps all three or keeps just
keeps all three. It has to be one fell swoop that one or two stocks fall.
So if you go ahead and you scythe or an entire sheaf, and then you accidentally drop it, then obviously your intention was not to,
Exactly. Right? That's not it.
That's not, okay.
Yeah.
So that would come under the thing of at least three stalks.
Yeah,
so
sure.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. V'dafka shenofa aleket miyad hakotzer below ones. That's if it falls, you're trying to gather as best you can, and two of them fall, so then they're for the poor. Al-hikol kotz biyado v'nafal ein zeleket. But if you were trying to gather all of them, and a bee came and stung you, or here the example is that if you have it was a thorn or something in the field and hit your hand, and you drop the two stalks even, so that's not like it. It has to be without an external pressure. The suffix leket leket. Here we have a very interesting principle. Shenemar aniva rash hatzdiku tzadik mishelach v'tenlo. That since it said you shall deal justly with the poor and the destitute, so it means that you should err on the side of giving him more than giving him less. So let's say you're not sure whether this produce fell in the proper manner or not, so you still have to give it to the poor person because this is general principle in Stucca. I mean, different poskim have different approaches to exactly how extensively they take this and in governing stock in general, but in general, you're supposed to, when you have a doubt as to whether you are something is designated for stock or not, you're supposed to err on the side of giving it, which is opposed to the general rule, which is as hamotzi mechaver olav haraya, that normally when you want to extract money from someone else, so you have to provide the proof. If we went to court and I sued Harry and I said, Harry, you owe me, I'm suing you. You owe me $1 million. And the judge says, you know, Harry, do you have any proof that you don't owe him $1 million? I was going to say, I don't have any proof. Judge says, judgment in favor of the plaintiff, $1 million. That would be a very ridiculous system. If you want to extract money from someone else, the burden of proof is on you. But that's not the case with a poor person. Now, the poor person, the burden of proof is on the wealthier person that this is not stucca. That's why there's lots of shilas in the response to literature about, let's say you pledge stucca and you don't remember to which organization you pledged it. So maybe you have to give them to all the organizations that you normally give to. Because you have to, it's the burden of proof is on you to make sure you discharge your obligation to stucca rather than the burden of proof being on this organization that you owe them.
Proof to whom?
Yourself, God.
But why doesn't that contradict the law that if three stalks fall, you they're not like it?
No, let's say you have a doubt. Let's say a few stalks fell, and you see, they fell on top of each other or something. So maybe it was, let's say there are four of them. So you don't know whether it was two fell at a time, in which case it would be like it. Or maybe three fell and then one fell, in which case only one would be like it. Mm-hmm. So you have to give all four of them.
The calculation every time.
V'din tevua shenimtzeis b'chorei hanimolim. So let's say you find produce in ant holes. So what's the rule over here?
Leave it to the ants.
Poor people are not so quick to leave their stuff to the ants. They want to get their full due of leket. So the different interpretations of the Mishnah that discusses this, but the normative one is that of the Rambam, that if it's in an area of the field that's been harvested already, then you have to give it because you assume that it is like in a scenario of the field that has not been harvested yet. You assume it's from the stuff that has not been harvested, and therefore you don't have to give it to the poor person. I mean, it's too much of a, even though normally if there's a suffix, you have to give it to the poor person. It's too much to assume that somehow the produce from the already harvested area made it back into the non-harvested area and into the ant hill.
Ants,
I don't carry stocks. I mean, I don't know.
Surely
do. V'din shibolas shaleket shel nisarva begadish. This is also an interesting halacha. Let's say you've harvested all your stuff. You have the huge piles of grain. And then one of your workers throws in two more stocks to this huge pile of grain. So he said, where'd you get those stocks from? Oh, they were just lying in the field. You just mixed in leket into my whole huge pile of produce that I just harvested? No, you don't have to give the whole thing. That would be quite an imposition. what you have to do is you have to give the poor the equivalent amount to what was originally leket. And if you had a doubt about it, you have to give until you... It's the general expression. You have to do it until you have no more doubt. It's like the same lesson that's used if there's, like last night, if there's a cloudy, rainy night, and you can't see when the stars come out in order to end Shabbos, you have to wait until the doubt has left your heart as to whether it's actually fully nighttime yet. So you do, you have to give leket until the doubt leaves your heart. But what you do, it's interesting, because the presents for the poor are exempt from tithes. So they get... So you have no right... What?
For them. The poor don't have to pay tithes. Is that what you're saying?
The poor don't have to pay tithes on them. So then you can say, well, how many stalks did you just mix into my huge pile of produce? Maybe he'll say, you know, there were... Let's say there were two. One, just one batch of leket. There were just two stalks. So you say, okay, well, I'm going to take another two stalks to give to the poor, but these stocks were obligated in Truma Sumaisris because I harvested them for myself. So now they have to say, here you go, poor person, take two stocks, but you have to give, well, if times where you actually give it to a Levi, then you're talking over 10%. Going a Levi is over 10%, or that's a lot. And then there's Maaser Ani, which is another 10% in two of the years of the cycle, so you're giving away a lot of stuff. So the Ani's going to say, well, thank you very much, Mr. Jones. I don't, you know, it's too much. I can't afford to give all these things. So what you have to do is you have to give him two pre-tithed stocks.
Two?
Pre-tithed. No, you have to separate the tithes from the other produce to cover this one, and then give it to the poor in a pre-tithed manner so he doesn't have to deal with separating the tithes.
You have to count the stocks, the number of stocks do you have in order to take 10%?
It's not clear. You might have to count them.
Yeah. The
grains.
Grain.
I mean, right. Okay. So, well, it's not chayv and ma'aser malacha. Okay, but we're assuming that you have to give it to him in a way where he wouldn't have to tithe it anymore. The Kitzer. There are different halachas. When we get to those halachas, we'll talk about exactly how you have to measure the produce in order to make sure you give the proper 10%. Nowadays, it's easy. Because nowadays we don't actually give the ma'aser to a Levi because they, first of all, so they can't actually prove that they're Leviim, so we have a principle of motzi mechaver olav haraya. So some people, especially, you know, a lot of times the people are ma'asering in their houses, so they're ma'asering stuff that they already bought at the marketplace. So the stuff that's in the marketplace is already tithed by the rabbanut usually. So sometimes, since it's not a physical thing, it's just it's more of a metaphysical thing to separate trumas from maaseris. So you can't keep track very well of what things have been maaser or not. So some people have the chav chumra that they maaser everything that comes into their house to make sure it's done properly because there have been issues of a lot of mix-ups, especially with less good hashgachos. That's one of the hardest things to keep track of. So some people only re-meiser when they buy from a hechsher that they don't, you know, they're not so thrilled with. Some people re-meiser everything. And also, we're going to discuss later, that's also because of an issue of demai. That Chazal removed in the Eid Echad Neman B'Yisurin from the Hafrashas Trumas U'Meisers. So since that, so you can, maybe you can't, you're not allowed to trust anybody that they were Mafrash Trumas U'Meisers properly. That's why some people, mostly brisker type people, so they really take this very seriously. They won't trust anyone that they were mafresh trumas u'maaser. They always mafresh for themselves for this reason, but most people have this chumra to maaser stuff that they buy is just, it's more of a chazanish type of approach that that he said that it's, you really should do this because of all the mix-ups, and when you're on a large scale, you can't keep track of it, so therefore it's better to do that. But if you know some that somebody, in other words, according to the chazanish, if you have a friend who you know is careful about maisering everything himself, then you're allowed to eat at that person's house. Whereas going to Brisk Grove, you'd still have to maiser it yourself because you bet I'm not allowed to believe him. Okay, we'll discuss that more when we get to maiser.
Food for Eretz Yisrael?
Yeah, Eretz Yisrael. Only Eretz Yisrael.
That's what you buy down from Mexico or from
found out that none of us
in California. I mean, you don't have
what?
What you buy produce from Mexico or California.
Oh, no. Only Eretz Yisrael. Only, for sure, only Eretz Yisrael.
There was this cute story when we were learning with the instructor, and he found out that none of us knew how to do this, and as a result, we never bought any produce from Israel. And he was just like, no. And he went through one, two, I still have the notes, one, two, three, four, five.
Oh, yeah.
Horrified. That was our approach to the problem.
But isn't all of that, you know, you're throwing it away, Baltashkes?
Baltashkes only applies when you throw away for no reason. If there's any halachic reason to do it, then it's not Baltashkes. Baltashkes does not apply. Yeah, so some people, again, the Chaznish recommended that you should miser anything that's commercial, basically. Anything commercial, even if it has badatz eidacharedis hechsher. The most accepted hechsher, you should still do it because of the that it could be there could be potential mix-ups. But most people don't do that. It's not the common
some
practice.
Do it.
What do you mean?
In Israel, I think. I mean, I don't know. There's a you know, Mr. Jin's fruit and vegetable place across from Orientali, and it's under somebody super, and so the store does it. I think if they believe there's no anyway, they said
right.
They were 100% that everything in the store was. I shouldn't worry. That I was so worried, but anyway.
Well, there's no 100%. I'm saying there's no 100% unless you do it yourself, really, but...
Alright, we won't mention that.
And how does the Rabbanut do it? So it's covered by the Rabbanut because they take. How do they do it?
Oh, yeah, so what I'm saying, so most of the time when in Israel where you're actually going to be tithing something, so probably it was already tithed. So therefore, there's another reason that you don't have to give the miser to a Levi, in addition to the idea that you don't know exactly 100% who's a Levi nowadays. We don't have exact genealogical documents. So you have to tell the Levi, okay, now there's two burdens of proof on you. One, prove that you're a Levi. Two, prove that this hasn't been tithed already. So that's why you don't have to do it. We'll discuss Demai, and we'll discuss this more. But there are people who, let's say they have a tree in their backyard, so... when they're separating shumas and maisers, because they want to eat from that tree, so they know that hasn't been tithed before. So a lot of times people will give the maaser rishon to a Levi.
Not the first 3 years, you can.
That's true. After the first 3 years, then people actually give the maaser rishon to a Levi.
What if the tree belongs to the landlord?
So he has to tithe. He has to give
the
shumas and maisers.
And if he doesn't, then you have to tithe.
Yeah. It's not kosher until it's tithed. It has nothing to do with if it's your obligation, then it's not kosher until you tithe it. If it's somebody else's obligation, so it is kosher until you tithe it. The food is not kosher until it's tithed. Mm-hmm. Period. Anyway, so that's, you will actually give the Maaser Rishon to a Levi in certain circumstances. And the Maaser Ani, when there's a year of Maaser Ani, so that alternates between Maaser Sheni and Maaser Ani, that most of the years of the cycle, the 7-year cycle of Shemitah, so are Maaser Sheni that you have to separate another Maaser and eat it in Yerushalayim. Or, instead of eating in Yerushalayim, you can redeem it with money and then use the money to buy food that you eat in Yerushalayim. Which we don't do nowadays, there's no Mizbeach, so you just have it on the money, okay, you just have the value on the money, etc. But, in a year of Maaser Ani, so in years 3 and 6 of the Shemitah cycle, so instead of Maaser Sheni, you have Maaser Ani. So that you actually have to give to the poor. So the same thing over here, that if you... don't if you are for sure that it hasn't been meistered already, then you have to give it to the poor.
And you're only talking about produce,
right? Not meat.
Mm-hmm. Not meat and not anything that is manufactured.
What do you mean?
Like dairy or something?
Yeah. Oh, dairy, right? But if there's pretzels or something that's made of wheat, if you're not sure it's been meistered, then you have to meister your pretzels.
What about pocketbooks?
Wait a second, so
what do you mean? That's leather.
Yeah, so...
you don't need it. It has to be food.
Yeah, food, yeah.
Oh, so wait a second, food. So in other words, so agricultural really means food. That, you know, every time you go to the bakery and you get a loaf of bread, you know, people would...
Briskers?
Yeah. Of corn.
Yeah.
Yeah, they call that. And
if you, or chaznishnikers, if you really take this seriously, that you're not allowed to trust anybody or any hechsher for whatever reason, the chaznish mm-hmm. reason, the brisker reason, you have to meister everything. Yeah, if you buy a loaf of bread from the bakery, you take off... a little more than 1%, and you may meister it that way.
And for Shabbos, you leave it over, right? From the
There are other ways to do it on Shabbos. Yeah. I mean, there are different ways to do it on Shabbos.
We'll either
you make a t'nai, you say that you're going to separate the tithes on Shabbos, in which case you're allowed to do it, or you do a breira that some shittas allow you to do, and so, again, the details we'll discuss later, but that you say... yeah, you can say that what I'm going to be mafresh later should retroactively be considered to be ma'aser. There are ways to do it on Shabbos. It's interesting now that you mentioned Shabbos. So the Chazon Ish, this is one of the interesting rulings of the Chazon Ish, that one time, because you're not allowed to be mafresh trumas or maisers on Shabbos, because it looks like you're fixing the food. So it's us with the Rabbanan. Yeah. It's us with the Rabbanan. There are many gzeris that Chazal established because it looks like makeh bepatish. That there's a melacha d'oraisa that when you put the final hammer stroke on something that you're making and now it's usable, that's the melacha makeh bepatish. But the Chazal said that if you miser something on Shabbos, that the food was not kosher before, now all of a sudden it's kosher. Or let's say you have a vessel that's tamei, and you want to immerse it in the mikvah. Now, before the vessel wasn't usable, now it's usable. So the Chazal said that they're not allowed to do that because it's similar to the malacha of makeh bepatish. So midrabban, you're not allowed to do these things on Shabbos. So the Chazon Ish said, so one time somebody brought, I think, wine. They had the hechsher of the badatz of the Eidah Haredis, and they needed to use it on Shabbos, or bread, I think, bread or wine, or something like that. So he said that he will allow, and they forgot to make any t'nai that they could meiser it on Shabbos. So he said, no, he thinks that it's better to meiser it on Shabbos than to eat it without being meisered. Why is that? Because even though he doesn't allow you to eat it without being meisered, and now it's like you're fixing it, mm-hmm. Nevertheless, since probably it's a good extra, so probably it was meistered already, so it's not considered as much of a real fixing as if you really had a concern that it wasn't meistered already and there was something really mikra din about it. Which is a funny aura, because he really held you weren't supposed to eat it, and now you're allowed to eat it, but nevertheless, so some people rely on that also, that it's from a good extra and they want to re-meister it anyway, so that you're allowed to do on Shabbos. It's similar to what the Mishnah says in Maseches Beitzah, that if something's only a chumrah, then you're allowed to do it on Shabbos. What do I mean? So let's say you have a kli, a vessel that's become tamei because somebody used it and you don't fully trust their tumah v'tahara, or because you have different standards of tumah v'tahara than this other person. So you want to re-immerse it in the mikvah in order that it should become tahor according to your standards. So the Mishnah says that on Shabbos and Yontif, you're allowed to do that because it's not a significant tikkun. A significant fixing of the vessel because it's just a chumrah. Therefore, based on that, so that could be part of the basis of the Chazon Ish's decision over here. That's why also people say, ordinarily, I mean, this is all machlokas we've shown him into itself, but if you're allowed to do what we do nowadays, to immerse vessels on Shabbos and Yontif. And most of Rishonim actually hold that this is not relevant to to immersing vessels from Tumah V'Tahara that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, and you're actually allowed to immerse new vessels that you bought from a non-Jew on Shabbos. That immersion is not covered by this prohibition. But that's not our practice. The Ashkenazi practice is that you are not allowed to even do this immersion of vessels on Shabbos and Yontif. Sfardim are generally machmer that way, but they, since the Mechaber and Shulchan Aruch is Mekel, so they have more reason to be Mekel in certain situations.
So if you want it from a corporation, so it's a question of whether or not it was really owned by a non-Jew.
That's a good point. That's not the example I was going to use.
I can safely walk into the Breuer's.
Oh, yeah, good luck with that.
You can't carry it.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
Oh, of course. Well, there we go. Okay.
I mean, that's
Yontif. You could. Yeah. I mean, there are other ways to do it on Yontif also. But whatever. So let's say some people have a chumrah to, as is stated explicitly on the wall of the Kalim Mikvah in Washington Heights, that some people have a chumrah to immerse plastic. Why is that? So the Gemara says that really that when the Torah mentions, in the verse that from which we derive Tefillas Kelim, so it mentions metals. So since glass is like metal in the sense that you can melt it down and reform it, so therefore, Chazal where goes that you have to immerse glass vessels as well. So the Gemara says, listen, no, you have to make a bracha on glass. The other thing, certain things that are suffic, they're coated with glass, so no, but a pure glass vessel you do.
Loaf pans that you can use without tumbling and throw them out.
What, the aluminum?
Aluminum foil.
Yeah, the disposal ones. Yeah.
That would be another good example. So since really it's only a chumrah to tovel, some people tovel those also. There's reasons not to. We're not going to go into right now. But if you're machmir to tovel aluminum pans, or I was going to say if you're machmir to tovel plastic, because plastic can also be melted and reformed. Most poskim say that even though plastic can be melted and reformed like metal, since Chazal didn't have plastic and never established a rule about plastic, so you don't have to tovel plastic. But other poskim are machmer that really you should, because it falls into the same category. That's very much, that's accepted by only a minority of groups.
Depends on kind of plastic. If it's a thermosetting plastic or something like that, then you can't melt it.
Well, What kind of plastic?
No, it's a true kind of okay. Is it plastic, which is like, say, polyethylene, you could melt that and reform it. Okay?
Yeah.
But if it's cross-linked, something like that, in other words, then basically the whole thing is one big molecule, you can heat it up, it'll just burn. You can't, it won't melt.
Well, in that case, it wouldn't be chai, for
all
sure.
Right, you have to know the kind of plastic, then, you say. I don't know if that's
a... Right. So let's say you want it to be machmir to tovo plastic, or you want it to be machmir to, or I don't know, maybe Breuer's holds maker right in. I don't know, maybe it's, I don't know. Whatever. If you, we normally assume that these are only chumras. If you want to be machmir to tovo plastic, or you want to be machmir to tovo, these are disposable aluminum pins, so technically you'd be allowed to do that on Shabbos and Yontif because of this rule that if it's not a real tikkun, then you're allowed to do it. Okay. V'yeser proteha mivoarim v'maseches peah. It's all explained in maseches peah. Ulinyan be'ezem makom noheges umi chayeba ve'onesh ha'over aleha ha'kol kemo be'peah. So that all these agricultural mitzvahs are the same, applicable midoraisa in Eretz Yisrael, and the punishment will be, again, there's normally no punishment because if you take the leket for yourself, you just have to give that amount to the poor person. But let's say you use that leket and it doesn't exist anymore, there's no restitution you can possibly make, then you'd be liable to malchus because there's no way you can rectify your violation of this negative commandment. I mean, here we're talking about the positive commandment, but mitzvah ratio test, the next one, 219, shelo lakacha shibolim anoflim b'shasa katzir. So that's not to take like it. Shelo lakacha shibolim anoflim b'shasa katzir, aval nazovo samlaniyem, shenemar v'leket kitzircha lo silakeit. You are not allowed to take the leket. V'ze gamke nitak la'asei kemoshe be'arnu v'peya. That's connected to the positive commandment, which we just discussed above. The whole Indian mitzvah zo gamkin ksavtiv lemala b'seder zev mitzvah saseh shaleket gimel. Okay, we just discussed all the details in the positive commandment of leket.
Why do you need both a positive and negative commandment here?
What do you mean? What do you mean?
I mean, in other words, saying that you have to, there's a positive commandment that you have to, you leave leket. Okay?
Right.
And then you have to say the negative commandment that if you, that you know, in other words, to establish that there's an onus for the, you know, for actually, for,
yeah.
Okay, right.
Well, then this happens all the time in the Torah. There's always lived positive and negative commandments.
Okay, well, then you wouldn't need the positive one. You say, you know, I mean, right?
No, because it wants to be nitak laseh. If there were just a negative commandment, then you'd be liable to lashes right away once you violated it. Mm-hmm. It's not nitak laseh.
Oh, all right,
okay. Yeah.
Who's going to administer the lashes?
The Bezdin.
But, I mean, let's say today.
Nowadays we don't administer lashes anymore. You have to have smuchim. You have to have real smicha. From Moshe Rabbeinu in order to administer lashes. Nowadays, the Beis Din could administer extrajudicial lashes. Uh-huh. In theory. I mean, we can't really do that. We're pretty much enjoined by doing that by the American government. But even a Beis Din nowadays can administer punishments that they see fit in order to lead the community into a proper behavior. Well, that you could still do.
Not giving an aliyah or whatever, et cetera, et cetera.
Excommunication is legal in American law, I would think.
Oh, yeah?
It wasn't. It didn't used to be, 150 years ago in Europe. That's why in the sections of the Shulchan Aruch that talks about excommunication, Hilchos Nidui, so it has a little footnote that says, these are only for the times when the Beis Din was authorized to administer Nidui. But nowadays, in this wonderful country, they don't allow us to excommunicate people, so therefore these laws are inapplicable nowadays.
So
that was for the censor. They had government censors reading the Shulchan Aruch, and if you didn't put that note, then they would make you take out the whole thing.
Wait a second. I mean, was it the church that would not allow
I think the government. I think it's
the government. Which circumstances? Why did they care if you're?
I think they didn't want the Jewish community to have too much independent power at that time.
Like Spinoza was excommunicated.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of things like that. The one says Hilchos Avodim, you know, slaves. The laws of slaves. It also has a little footnote that says this is only in the time, and even in the Hilchos Gerim. Laws of conversion, there's a little footnote that says this is only applicable, you know, in the olden days when we were allowed to accept Gerim, mm-hmm. But nowadays this wonderful government that we live in does not allow us to accept converts.
Does
so therefore,
allow us to accept
not in America, I'm saying in Russia, they didn't allow they didn't allow people to convert to Judaism.
Yeah. It was a capital offense to, you know.
There was a famous story with the Vilna Gaon and Reb Avram.
Yeah.
That there was a duke.
Ger Tzedek, yeah.
Yeah.
A Ger Tzedek.
Yeah.
So what about,
a Ger Toshav. Ger Toshav is only in Eretz Yisrael in the time where there's a Yovel.
So
there was a fellow who was a nobleman in a Polish nobleman, Lithuanian nobleman, whatever.
Next to the Grof.
Right.
Yeah.
There was a Polish nobleman who converted to Judaism, and he remained hidden for a while, but then he got outed somehow, and then.
And when they were going, and when the Lithuanian communists were going to go and put a parking lot over the cemetery, they're allowed to move two graves, and they picked the Grof and the Solden.
Yeah, there's very interesting stories that have cropped up around there. It says that the Vilna Gaon offered, Vilna Gaon was a big fan of his, the Vilna Gaon offered to save him from, he was in prison awaiting his sentence. Vilna Gaon said, I could invoke certain mystical names of God and, take you out of prison. So the Ger Tzedek said, no, I want to die Al Kiddush Hashem. Yeah.
I didn't think the world was a mystic.
What?
I didn't
The Gra? Big mistake.
Yeah, right.
Okay, let's just do one more. Mitzvah Reish Chaf, it's short. The main discussion is in two from now. Shelo lechal, I'm sorry, mitzvahs hanochas pa'as hakerem. The mitzvah to leave peah in a vineyard. La'aniach peah ba'kerem, u'peah zo shel kerem hotzi akosu bilshon ololos. The Torah describes it with the language of Ololos. Kilomar shitzavinu shenasher kol ha'ololos shebakerem lepeya. So we have to give the immature grapes in place of peya. V'zeo dichsiv le'ani v'lager tazovosam achar shezachar v'char mecha lo se'olol. You're not allowed to take every single last grape from the vineyard, even the underdeveloped ones. Zeo das ha'rambam zichron al-vracha v'ololos ha'kerem. She'bemokom peya shebashari lano. So according to the Rambam, I will say in a second, this is the Rambam's original thought process before he changed his mind. But the Rambam thought originally that the mitzvah of Ololos was in place of Peah. So instead of leaving a corner of the vineyard, you have to leave the immature grapes as the, sort of corner spread throughout the vineyard. But that's what the poor people get to take. The Haramban, Zichrono Livracha, Lo Perish Kain. He did not say this. That's good. Let's come in the next one. I'm going to explain it as I normally do, that how do we learn that there is peah, you have to leave a corner of your orchards, not just your fields. And he's also going to explain, I'll give you a sneak preview, or maybe I should leave you in suspense until next week. I'll make sure you come back. But that the Rambam changed his mind and he agreed with the Ramban in the end. That the Ololos was a separate mitzvah, that you had to leave Peah in a vineyard plus the immature grapes. That was a completely separate mitzvah.
The Rambam agreed with the Ramban, he lived before him.
No, the Rambam changed his mind and came to the same conclusion that the Ramban came to.
But not because.
No, he did not. The Ramban convinced him that he was wrong. No.